Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way. From design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/Green Festival.
To my successor, whoever he or she may be. Number one, stay close to the Americans, stick up for the Ukrainians, stick up for freedom and democracy everywhere.
Politics in general has taken total leave of its senses.
Changing one man at the top of the Tory party won't make any difference. It won't fix the problems. Let's have a fresh start for Britain. Let's have a real change of government.
You're listening to Bloomberg UK Politics, your daily guide to the corridors of power. I'm Stephen Carroll. Coming up on today's show, double trouble. The UK's inflation rate soars to over 10% in July. The price of food has skyrocketed. That's one of the main factors driving up price rises. We'll break down the economic and political consequences with our economics and government reporter Lizzie Burden and our opinion columnist Marcus Ashworth as well. Plus, the candidates are on tour after Scotland on Tuesday. Liz Truss and Rishi Sunak heading to Northern Ireland today to take part in the next Conservative Party hustings in Belfast. To get a sense of the issues the candidates should be discussing, we'll speak to Matthew O'Toole, who leads the opposition SDLP in Northern Ireland's Assembly. Well, inflation has reached double digits, a new 40-year high for the Consumer Price Index. It hit 10.1% in July. That's adding to pressure on household budgets. The government says no new support measures will be announced until the Tory leadership contest ends in September. The Chancellor of the Duchy of Lancaster, Kit Malthouse, has defended this position.
A meeting just last week with Nadeem Zahawi, Chancellor Exchequer, to talk about the different elements of the economic package that might be available to a Prime Minister while the current £37 billion flows out, so they're able to make decisions quickly.
Now, the Labour Party has proposed a freeze on the energy price cap. That's expected to jump in October. We'll find out by how much next week. Shadow Home Secretary Yvette Cooper has criticised inaction by the government while they wait for that Conservative Party leadership contest to play out.
We've got to take that action to support families right across the country who are otherwise going to be hit by another £1,000 on their energy bills. That is just wrong. Government needs to act. A Labour government would act. We're urging the Conservatives to stop faffing around.
Now, inflation has been driven by price rises of essentials like bread and eggs, with pet food, toilet rolls and deodorant also getting more expensive. Mick Fleming runs a food bank in Burnley, and he's been speaking about the impact that he's seen from price rises.
It's dire, but what he's doing is he's creating a new poor, and that's something that's very frightening. Because when you've got people who are actually working but can't sustain a month-to-month lifestyle just by eating, getting to work, travelling there, we're in trouble.
Research by the think tank Centre for Cities identifies Burnley as one of the hardest hit places in the UK by inflation. Well, we've been delving into the inflation numbers and the political implications with Bloomberg's EMEA economics and government correspondent Lizzie Burden and opinion columnist Marcus Ashworth. Alex Webb and I spoke to them a little earlier.
It's hard to be anything other than ouch, isn't it? There is going to be some noise, though, because if you actually look through some of the data, particularly on food and especially on petrol prices, we're going to see a downtick next month and probably the month after that as well, only to be met with another wave, tsunami wave, obviously from the Ofgem price cap lift on energy prices in October. So, you know, it's one of these sorts of things, you know, you don't want to be a central banker here, do you really? But I think the read across, especially from that very strong Labour data yesterday as well, is that it puts the Bank of England in some senses, it makes their task easy because they're going to have to hike, I think, almost certainly 50 basis points now. And whereas before I would have probably said they would have done 25, but I think they've got to go 50 in September.
Lizzie, this seems like a fairly game changing readout for the Bank of England. Where were their expectations before this and how are they likely to have shifted now?
Yeah, well, they had seen inflation peaking at 13% in October, so that might have might be even higher now that we're already into double digits. Bloomberg Economics, our in-house economists, have changed their base case. So they now do see 50 basis points in September, agreeing with Marcus. And the former Monetary Policy Committee member, Andrew Sentence, has been on the airwaves this morning saying that the key rate may need to rise to 3-4% because policymakers have fallen behind the curve. I mean, it's an easy choice, but it's also going to have difficult consequences because remember that rate hike, the jumbo rate hike in August, the Bank of England warned that it was going to lead to this long, shallow recession. And so another jumbo hike in September is going to deepen this crisis even more.
Marcus, we're looking at the bond market reaction with the yield curve inverting the most since 2008, as we mentioned. Is this a big shock given the nature of the numbers and what are the broader implications of that?
Yeah, I don't know quite what the broader... I never really quite understand why people get so excited about the yield curve inversion because clearly what's happened here is that this is a surprise for everyone, including the front end of the market, that these numbers are quite so strong and they basically, I think, as I said, they were getting ready for this with the Labour data yesterday. So... it's, if you look at the curve, it's not actually inverted from threes outwards so much as you know, fairly standard. It's just this short end move where they're repricing. I think as Lizzie's pointing to, it's going to be quite difficult for the Bank of England to continue to hike interest rates at quite such a pace. And though we may end up a little bit higher than perhaps we would have thought, I still think they're going to struggle to get to 3% or close because the economy will not handle it, and they will have also done as bad as much they probably can. But, you know, the longer this goes on, the harder it is to defend these types of positions because, you know, clearly the Bank of England is having to do what it doesn't want to do necessarily, but it's very clear that with this sort of strength, it's only 0.2 above what their own forecast is. But nonetheless, I think just the significance of 10% is going to lead through to a lot more aggressive wage negotiations and people putting prices up in shops and businesses because... you know, it's more than 10% inflation, and therefore there's your excuse. And that will clearly feed through to innovation expectations.
Lizzie, is this going to focus minds in the Tory leadership race, the other half of where, you know, the policy response to this could come from?
Yeah, we had more hustings in Scotland last night. The two candidates having to respond to Keir Starmer's proposals to continue the windfall tax and freeze energy bills over the winter. Sunak says he wouldn't do that, but he'd offer targeted support for the poorest households. Truss still falling back on the tax cuts she's already proposed. So commentators around Westminster are saying that Sunak ought to reframe the debate, focus on energy, because he's losing it when it comes to tax cuts, at least in the minds of the Tory grassroots who he's appealing to. But the other half of this is many see the Bank of England as failing. You know, Sentence has said the Bank of England's behind the curve. A big thing that Truss is proposing is to change the Bank of England's mandate or at least review it. The question is, would that actually help or would it just scare investors off gilts and sterling when we're in the middle of an inflation crisis?
Marcus, I'm sure you have strong views on the Conservative leadership race. What do you think about the prospects of reevaluating the Bank of England's role?
I think this is all just in the weeds at the moment. I mean, to try and second guess what the mandate change, if there is one, is not actually very helpful. And I clearly appreciate Andrew Bailey realising that and perhaps getting off his high horse and realising that a mandate review is just a very sensible thing to do when you've got a 2% target and you're already more than five times over it and heading higher. You know, no sane person would think that this current regime has worked as it should have done. They made the mistakes, it's about time they admitted them, and then we can get on with sorting it out. But equally, we don't want to make, you know, two wrongs don't make a right here. We don't want to overreact and just keep on hiking because it will obliterate the economy. So I think there is some measure and importance in a calmer market, as Lizzie's saying, like, not the right here right now, but at some point, along with the Bank of England, these things only work if the Bank of England is 100% in agreement with what its mandate should be changed. They should be proposing, and that's the sort of idea I think that hopefully will come out of this. So I don't really worry too much about the Bank of England mandate change, if indeed there will be one, because it's very confusing to change it to, say, like a nominal GDP or money supply target. So I suspect there'll be just a tweak, if anything at all.
You are famously upbeat when it comes to the UK economy. I'm wondering, have you found a silver lining
not as pessimistic as everyone else, because I look across Europe and I see just as bad, if not worse, both particularly on the economy, but equally on inflation. We're just in the same boat everyone else is. And there are some excellent things. You know, if you look at the labour data coming through, we have a very strong economy, a residual economy, a lot of people, everyone's in jobs. And that surely must be a good place to, if you want to go into recession, it's a good place to start from. So yeah, look, we're in a difficult bind. I think everyone across the rest of the world is experiencing very similar things. What we were doing wrong in this country was fiscal tightening. And going back to Alice's question on the Conservative leadership race, I think we put that one to bed, and we've seen nothing but reversal from Rishi Sunak, who is responsible for doing what I think was quite a mad bad thing. Whether or not we should be splurging is a different question altogether, but clearly we are going to get a lot more fiscal input, and that is going to at least soften. You know, I had to chat with Dan Hansen, our UK economist. He reckons about $60 billion is going to be needed to avoid recession. Well, I think we're going to get something close to that.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline, it's teamwork, and it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.
Success is more than the final destination. It's a path you take one step at a time. It's discipline. It's teamwork. And it's the drive and passion inside of us that comes before all recognition. It's what Stifel's been doing for over 130 years. Quietly, yet strategically, Stifel's become one of the fastest growing wealth management and investment banking firms in the country. Our financial advisors go beyond traditional wealth management to provide clients with direct access to one of the industry's largest equity research franchises and a leading middle market investment bank. Because success is the drive it takes to keep climbing, the passion to keep investing, the best of each of us made better by the best in all of us. And that is where success meets success. Start your journey at Stifel.com. That's STIFEL.com.
Stifel Nicholas and Company Incorporated, member SIPC and NYSE.
The countdown has begun. From May 14th to 16th, 1,000 global leaders will gather in Doha for the Qatar Economic Forum powered by Bloomberg. Join heads of state, influential ministers, and leading CEOs to make new connections, gain unique insights, and uncover valuable opportunities in one of the world's most rapidly rising regions. Request your invite for this exclusive event at QatarEconomicForum.com.
The Conservative Party leadership candidates head to Northern Ireland today for their 8th hustings. Although the Tories don't have any elected representatives there, the candidates will be trying to win over party members in Belfast at a time when Northern Ireland remains at the centre of the UK's post-Brexit dispute with the EU. As Foreign Secretary Liz Truss put the bill to Parliament to override part of the Brexit deal relating to trade rules between Britain and Northern Ireland. Well, we're joined now by Matthew O'Toole, who's a member of the Northern Ireland Assembly for the Social Democratic and Labour Party for South Belfast and the leader of the opposition in the Assembly. Matthew, thank you very much for being with us on Bloomberg UK Politics. What would you like to hear the candidates focusing on in today's hustings?
Well, hi, Stephen. Thank you for having me. What I'd like to hear the candidates focus on is first of all, getting our institutions in Northern Ireland back up and running, what part they would play as a UK leader of the UK government that they both aspire to be in terms of re-establishing our institutions, political stability in Northern Ireland, the principles of the Good Friday Agreement, and then what they're going to do for people in general to deal with this extraordinary cost of living emergency cliff edge that people, frankly, across the world are facing, but in the UK like everywhere else, and indeed in Northern Ireland. But the problem is, Stephen, that I'm fairly sure they won't concentrate on those things because this Conservative leadership contest has been a bizarre and at times fairly horrifying spectacle of increasingly fantastical far-right identity politics, strange culture war fixations that are nothing to do with the issues facing real people who are struggling, but also completely detached from the realities in Northern Ireland.
Well, I'm sure the candidates would also say that they have been talking about the cost of living crisis, at least one issue that is very important to everyone across the UK. I'm interested in, obviously, Liz Truss is quite well known in Northern Ireland as Foreign Secretary. She's been there and she's spoken to political leaders in Northern Ireland. Do you have a preference between Liz Truss and Rishi Sunak?
I mean, I think they're both bad. Just to be blunt about it, they're both bad options specifically for Northern Ireland. I think it's also important to say, Stephen, that one of the things that we've seen in the last 6 or 7 years in British politics, specifically on the conservative right, and as we know, the right wing of English conservative politics has been what has dominated UK political discourse and UK political life over the last number of years, specifically since Brexit. The needs of Northern Ireland, which is a complex place, a post-conflict society with a unique set of arrangements. We now have a unique set of arrangements post-Brexit, which are about managing our relationship with the rest of Ireland, preventing a hard border in Ireland, but also protecting the broader benefits of the Good Friday Agreement, have frankly been completely trashed by people like both Liz Truss and Rishi Sunak, who have prioritised English conservative fixations and frankly, hard right nationalist politics in England at the expense, particularly of people in Northern Ireland. I don't think they care about us at all. And I don't think most people in Northern Ireland think, whether they're unionist, nationalist, or none of the above, think they care about people here at all. Their fixations are not ours, and their interests are not ours. So they will be coming tonight to speak to what is a fairly minuscule number of people who are members of the Conservative Party in Northern Ireland, and of course the Conservative Party itself in Northern Ireland has an unbelievably tiny mandate in this part of the world. They got about less than 300 votes at the Assembly election in May. There are, I think at the last count, more registered members of the Conservative Party in Northern Ireland than there were people who voted for them. That's, in a sense, in a democracy, quite an achievement to have more party members than you have votes in an election. But not a very, not a particularly good achievement. But what it does spell out, I think, is how completely detached they are from the reality of people's concerns here, but also how little of a mandate they actually have for the extreme and damaging things they've been doing to this place.
I mean, nonetheless, one of them will be the next prime minister and will be taking the lead on those relationships with the EU and also efforts to restore the assembly in Northern Ireland. Do you think either of them could succeed in convincing the DUP to return to power sharing?
Well, I hope they do. They do have power in this part of the world. I don't deny it. Would that it were otherwise. Unfortunately, I think what we've seen over the last number of years, as I say, has been UK governments walking away ever more recklessly from the principles of the Good Friday Agreement. And in part, that's because of this mutant gene which has taken hold specifically in English politics, which is Brexit. So we can't deny it is relevant to point out how the UK state has changed, how its politics have changed, and how the incentives for English conservative politics have changed as a result. But you are right to say that they, in their intray, will be re-establishing the institutions. Part of what that will mean will be proving to people that they can act as a responsible and fair dealer when it comes to Northern Ireland and its unique political institutions. Unfortunately, neither of them have looked at all like that's what they want to do. They've continued to bang the drum of hostility to the European Union. They have continued to pursue this reckless protocol bill, which at the behest of the DUP, and of course the DUP haven't even confirmed that if the protocol bill, they will go back in to devolve government. Conservative governments, having created this problem at the behest of the DUP, seem fixated on making it worse. I hope that they do take the steps necessary to re-establish the institutions, but that doesn't mean simply doing what the DUP tell them, because the DUP are one party in Northern Ireland, but they don't represent everybody, and of course most people here would remain. So they do need to prioritise actually delivering for all the people of this of this region. Unfortunately, I wish it were otherwise, but I don't have a huge amount of confidence that they will, because as I say, the Conservative Party, the UK Conservative Party, has this kind of strange mutant gene of toxic nationalism and culture war politics has really taken hold in it, particularly since 2016.
Well, now, you worked in Downing Street at 2016 during the Brexit referendum and until 2017. Do you have a sense that there are people there still, I'm talking about civil servants, who have can advise the next Prime Minister in a way that will resonate with people in Northern Ireland on these complex issues?
Well, there are still civil servants who I think officials who understand that in order to get the best for people in Northern Ireland, this is a complex society, that what you need is sincerity, seriousness, focused, consistent engagement from UK government ministers, a commitment to, crucially, the British-Irish relationship, because, Stephen, you know, the whole Good Friday settlement was based on, to use the phrase from the 1990s, listeners who were around then will remember, the totality of relationships across these islands. That means the relationships inside Northern Ireland, relationships north and south on the island of Ireland, and relationships east and west between the islands of Britain and Ireland. And of course, Brexit has disrupted all of those relationships, because the British-Irish relationship was made much easier on the basis of common EU membership. So as lots of people predicted, including myself, when I was still an official in Downing Street, once you disrupt those relationships, they're very difficult to put back together. My fear is that because Conservative politics is so addicted to the kind of Brexit wars, it's very difficult to get back to a place where you're committed to the kind of pluralist, multilateral engagement, focused engagement that is necessary to make this place work. Unfortunately, lots of us predicted this is what Brexit and hard Brexit would mean for British-Irish relations, Northern Ireland, and so it has proven. So I hope that the new Conservative Prime Minister, though I won't be supporting them politically, I represent a left-of-centre pro-Irish unity party, so we aren't on the same page in any case, but I do want to see a Conservative Prime Minister who is at least, to some extent, committed to constructive politics and making this place work. But I fear at the minute that we're not seeing that. But certainly we will engage with them, encourage them to engage properly. But we're not going to be anything other than robust in holding them to account, including over the protocol bill, this bill that they're using to disrupt the Northern Ireland protocol. You wouldn't know it if you listened to the debate in London sometimes, Stephen, but most people in Northern Ireland, according to all the polling data, support the protocol. A majority of MLAs who were returned to the assembly members were returned at the election in May, who support implementing the protocol. All major business groups want us to retain access to the EU single market. We're seeing the damage that it's doing to the GB economy in England, Scotland, Wales, to have lost that access. We have a bit of access to the single market for goods. We need to keep hold of it. We're doing better in some ways, some of the data shows, than other parts of the UK economy. So we want to protect those benefits.
And that's something that we've heard from both business groups and politicians on this programme before as well. But I'm wondering, you talked about that importance of relationships in the British-Irish relationship in particular. Does the departure of Boris Johnson allow space perhaps for a renewal? Perhaps there'll be a question of reality of leadership to whoever is the next Prime Minister to change the direction of those relationships. I'm searching for a note of optimism in this.
Well, look, I hope so. I think it's always important to try and be hopeful and to try and to find a way through these difficulties. And, you know, huge things have been achieved in the British-Irish relationship over the past quarter century. Unfortunately, the hard truth is that the thing that's undermined the most is Brexit, and hard Brexit specifically. And Brexit is now such a core part of the identity of the Conservative Party that it does make it difficult. But certainly, you know, any change, I suppose, is theoretically an opportunity to renew commitments to multilateralism. And I would encourage whoever wins this election to do that. I have to say, I'm not optimistic that they will. I don't want to be. And so it would be deceptive for me to come on and pretend that I think it's going to be okay. But I hope they do. I certainly hope they do. And we will be encouraging them to, and we will be engaging with them to that end. And I know the EU wants that too. I know the Irish government certainly wants it. And I think ultimately that should be in everybody's interests, not rather than pursuing just a tired, continual fight with the EU and bluntly. Okay. profiting from destabilisation in Northern Ireland, which Boris Johnson's government sought to do.
Okay, Matthew O'Toole from the SDLP in Northern Ireland, the leader of the opposition in the Assembly there.
Bloomberg UK Politics. Listen weekdays at noon on DAB Digital Radio in London.
Collaborate for a greener future at the Bloomberg Green Festival, a groundbreaking celebration of the thinkers, doers, and innovators leading the way, from design and culture to technology, science, and entertainment. Hear from inspirational speakers and immerse yourself in climate solutions, July 10th through 13th in Seattle. Title sponsor, Amazon. Official airline, Alaska Airlines. Get 20% off using promo code RADIO20 at BloombergLive.com/greenfestival.